It's time for the roundtable. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. Oh, yes. Love a little bit of Dolly Parton any time of the day or night, 7 days a week. Although the idea of working just 9 to 5 seems very last century these days. So here we are at 9:30 on a Sunday morning, and here's a quick question for you. Have you checked your work emails already today? Digital technology and the pandemic of working from home mean it's harder and harder for workers to disconnect out of hours, and easier for employers to encroach on our supposedly non-work hours. It's been called the invisible leash, and the negative impact of contact out of hours on workers' mental health has been recognised by the World Health Organisation. Indeed, in 2019, burnout was officially added to the WHO classification of diseases. So, should Australia follow France, Italy, the Philippines by introducing a law to give workers an explicit right to disconnect? Stay connected to RN to hear a range of perspectives from our expert panel, all of whom I suppose we should recognise straight up are on the clock already on a Sunday morning, including Jenny Lambert, who is the acting CEO of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you, Julian.
We're also joined by Dr. Jim Stanton, economist and director of the Centre for Future Work at the Australia Institute. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Julian.
And from the US, we are joined by Professor William Becker from the Pamplin College of Business at Virginia Tech. Welcome, William, as well.
Thanks, Julian. It's a pleasure to be here.
A pleasure to have you. William studies human resource management and has conducted various studies into the effects of work communication outside working hours, which we'll ask him about shortly. But I thought we'd start with the recently certified Victoria Police Enterprise Agreement, because that's the thing that brought the right to disconnect to prominence in Australia. It's got three clauses, and I'd just like to get our panel's reactions to these provisions. The first one says, supervisors and managers must respect employees' period of leave and rest days. The next one says, employees must not be contacted out of hours unless they're being paid an availability allowance, although there are exceptions for emergency situations or genuine welfare matters. And then the third one says explicitly, employees are not required to read or respond to emails or phone calls outside their effective working hours. Jenny Lambert, does that clause raise any concerns for you?
Not so much concern, but certainly we need to respect the fact that this is an enterprise agreement in a police situation. So I think there's a number of things there we need to be aware of. Firstly, in police, like any forces, there's a strict line of command, so people may feel more obligated than in other workplaces. Mm. And also the shift work in police, it's an emergency environment. So quite often the boss is on when the workers are off, you know, and vice versa. So shift work, I think, creates other dimensions in the issue about how and where work is connected, because if it's a 24/7 workplace, it's a bit different than other workplaces, which are more office hours.
Yes, absolutely. Jenny Lambert, I don't suppose, are you getting an availability allowance by appearing on Sunday Extra this morning from the Chamber of Commerce?
Definitely not. Definitely not.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to Dr. Jim Stanton then. What are your thoughts on that sort of three-headed provision for the Victoria Police?
Well, Julian, the thing that strikes me is how far the goalposts have changed that we even think we have to spell this out. I mean, look at those three provisions. They're pretty common sense. You know, you don't have to work outside of hours unless you're getting paid for it. And you don't have to answer a call from the boss in the middle of the night. You know, it shows you how far the work culture has changed and how the expectation of being always available to your employer has become the norm, that they feel they have to write this down. But the reality is they do have to write it down. And yes, police is a particularly unique and challenging type of job. But I can tell you, we've done our research and across the board, people are always being asked to do tasks, including return calls and emails outside of hours without being paid for it. It's an epidemic. And we absolutely should put down that everyone, not just people with a good enterprise agreement, have the right to unplug. dialogue.
Professor William Becker, do you agree that it's a good idea to write down and prescribe the extent to which workers can be contacted out of hours by the boss?
I would kind of agree that these things should be common sense, but these things didn't come down by people up top trying to squeeze it out. These really have risen from the behaviors of individuals, you know, supervisors, coworkers, and the pressures that people feel themselves oftentimes. And so sometimes these are actually self-inflicted, and it's a norm. It is an expectation. And sometimes these rules aren't really the best way to approach them, as much as getting managers at the ground level on board with the negative effects. And I totally agree that these are things that people shouldn't be expected to do, but sometimes it kind of happens by happenstance more than by design.
William Becker, could you tell us a little bit about your research into contacts between employers and employees out of hours, and whether there are particular patterns in terms of the types of employees who tend to be highly connected?
Yeah, I mean, the things we found is, again, this is, it spans all industry types. So in our research, we surveyed all industry types. So we saw it in government workers, we saw it in teachers, we saw it in manufacturing workers, we saw it clearly in technology workers. And there's some that are a little bit worse than all, but it seemed to be present in almost all areas of work these days. And so, again, I think some of it's kind of comes from our always on, always connected personal lives, and so it naturally gets extended, but we kind of underestimate the negative effects. And that's kind of what our research suggests, is that it's not the time we spend as much as it's the frequent monitoring and the frequent checking and the always worrying about it, much more so than the actual half hour we might spend dealing with something. It's that, again, that kind of nagging expectation to stay connected. And so I totally agree that encouraging people to disconnect for long periods of time when they're not working is a great idea.
Okay, thanks very much for telling us about that research. We've got a couple of texts coming in already. There's, I think, a fair amount of support for the idea of a right to disconnect. Nick in Hobart wants to be able to disconnect by right from the relentless stress and pressure of life, but says it should be followed by strong encouragements to reconnect, but with the natural world, Nick says in Hobart. And we've had a text from a part-time relief teacher who talks about having to do a lot of work outside hours, and says that apparently they sometimes have to have a nap at 4 p.m. after a hectic day at work and end up having a nightmare that they've fallen asleep and that the children woke them up. So, yeah, it can be stressful having to think about work out of hours. Jenny Lambert, can I come back to you? We talked at the beginning about an explicit clause in a enterprise agreement. Are there other informal ways of dealing with these issues, and how prevalent are things like policies amongst employers to deal with and sort of regulate out of work hours contact?
Yeah, and I think it is about a good relationship between a supervisor and employee, or manager and employee. I mean, I tend to agree with William's comment about there are other ways other than putting in place rules to deal with this issue, because it's really important to say one size doesn't fit all here. And employees often want to feel in control of their response and when they make their response, rather than being told one way or another. And it's better to personalise the understanding of each individual employee. Some employees, and certainly research from the University of Sussex shows that some employees will be disadvantaged by a blanket ban within a workplace about those issues. Now, that doesn't mean that good human resource management should not be about encouraging all the managers and supervisors not to, or to make it very clear to employees they don't have to respond, except in the case of emergencies, but that we shouldn't have a rule about it that's a one-size-fits-all rule, because different people respond in different ways. I mean, only 10% of people, according to studies, have indicated that they feel more productive without being connected to the internet. So that whole sense of being connected just translates to their connections to the workplace as well.
Although, Jenny, if there are sort of, if you've got a preference for other ways of regulating this, are Australian employers doing much along these lines, or will it take a sort of, you know, the nudge from explicit enterprise agreements and things like that to get employers really engaging with these issues?
I don't think it really takes the nudge from an agreement or rule perspective. This has been going on for a very, very long time. Technology has just, if you like, sped up or made it easier or made it the connections easier. And also we've now got the extra issue, particularly with the pandemic, of having a lot more people working from home. So in a sense, working from home quite often, you know, quite often can mean that, you know, someone's gone to go and collect the kids or do something with the kids, but then is more than comfortable to sit down after they've settled down for the night to do some work. I mean, these things are really flexible working arrangements, are really, inviting, if you like, a much more flexible approach to when you connect to work. And I think we're all just adjusting to all that now in a much a supercharged way. So I think we just need to think about the implications.
We're talking about the right to disconnect for workers on the round table today. Luke has texted in to say that they work for a global company based in Melbourne and is part of a team that has to log in early and late to meet different time zones, and that includes on public holidays when they're in one place and not the other. Luke says that they're very conscious of the grey line that makes for between work and not being at work, but asks what other option is there when what we do is global. Thanks for your text, Luke. If I could come back to you, Dr. Jim Stanton, the first jurisdiction, I believe, to introduce a right to disconnect was France. Do we know if introducing that formal right a couple of years back in France or in other jurisdictions is actually been effective in helping French workers to switch off?
You know, Julian, I'd be cautious about putting too much emphasis on that specific clause, whether it's in the Victorian Police Agreement or in this French law. The reality is that, as Jenny says, this issue, this debate has been going on for a very long time, really hundreds of years, in fact, that employers, if they have the opportunity, will try to get you to work for free. And that includes work for free outside of your normal working hours. And there's no doubt that technology has exacerbated the problem, and there's no doubt that work from home during the pandemic has exacerbated the problem. But workers have tried to find various ways to put limits on employers' ability to make them work for free, including national employment standards about hours of work, enterprise agreement provisions and provisions in the modern awards in Australia, and limits in some cases where it's required on the employer's ability to phone you in the middle of the night. Now, we shouldn't for a minute think that employers have the ability to phone you in the middle of the night. So that's, again, why I'm kind of struck by all of the attention on the Victorian Police clause. Because, you know, the reality is, unless you've got some kind of particular contractual arrangement with the employer, they shouldn't be calling you in the middle of the night anyways. And you certainly don't have to answer the call or respond. And, you know, I know Jenny and employer groups will always say, well, it comes down to flexibility and it comes down to good communication between the employer and the employee. And yes, of course, good communication always matters. But we can't understand these things outside of the context of the power imbalance between employers and employees. The reason so many people are checking their emails at bed is not because they love the email or they're addicted to work. It's because they're worried about performing up to the standards of their employer, keeping their job, getting their contract renewed, or getting a promotion. So this law in France, in a way, is important, I think, and interesting, and it has had some effects. There's examples of companies that have been fined for breaking that law. But I think it's part of a much bigger solution, which is about how do employers and workers negotiate the terms of the arrangement. And right now, in Australia, where most workers in the private sector don't have a union and they don't have an enterprise agreement, right now it's pretty much up to the goodwill of the employer as to how much they're expected to do out of hours, and that is a problem.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, that the original French law, the El Khomri law, as it was known, didn't actually define what the right to disconnect is, and it was more about placing an obligation on employers and employees to negotiate specifics about telecommunications out of hours and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and the interesting thing there,
sorry, go on,
Julian, is The interesting thing there is in France, 98% of workers are covered by an enterprise agreement. In Australia, in the private sector, it's 12%. So that's the fundamental difference right there. And that's why they have this right enshrined in France and we don't have it in Australia.
Jenny Lambert, if I could come back to you. You're the acting CEO of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. We've heard what Jim said about, you know, the sort of creep of hours and a sense of obligation, even if it's not explicit for employees to respond. How possible is it in practice for workers to push back against out-of-hours work communications if the boss isn't on board with that?
Well, I just think it's highly unusual for there to be a situation where the employee is not wanting to connect and the employer is forcing it. I think I absolutely accept the comment that we made about there being a sense of obligation or a sense of wanting to get ahead. But I mean that's human nature. I can't remember a time when I went into work on a weekend or whatever it's because my boss expected me to go in. When I was like a junior person starting out, and going into, bind reports that needed to be in the next week, I was doing it because I was dedicated to work. And a lot of people want to feel that way and want to feel that. That to me wasn't an obligation to work. That was a sense of loyalty, if you like, and a sense of commitment. And obviously they're good things and positive things. I think we just need to actually get a balance between saying, well, are we talking about, obligations? Are we talking about a sense of purpose and loyalty and a sense of commitment?
And
is that bad?
I'm sure that if you, enjoy your work and maybe have a good relationship with your supervisor or boss, those sorts of communications are less problematic. But Professor William Becker, you have looked into the impact in terms of health and well-being and that workplace sort of relationship with the boss in terms of out-of-hours emails for workers. Could you tell us a bit about the different kinds of effects that it can have and what determines those effects?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would like to touch really quickly on what Jim said, and I think this is absolutely true. I think what's interesting, though, is most of the time the supervisor isn't like consciously placing these expectations. They are just working long hours and working, and they send an email and it's top of the mind. And people don't feel the expectation, from up high. They often feel it from their coworkers as well. So to the flip side of that, too, I think, here in the U.S., the statistics are pretty grim with regards to how many people have great relationships with our supervisors, and I think that, to your point, exacerbates it a lot. And we actually did research where it showed that people tended to read a lot of negativity into their boss's emails, particularly after hours, even if the email itself was pretty neutral. I think there are a lot of good reasons to restrict email after hours or for supervisors to be very, very clear. Because it does have a very negative effect. And so we've shown that email, like reading an email, can have like a negative effect that lingers and create negative emotions that lingers for hours. But we've also shown that just even worrying about your emails or checking your emails is just equally damaging. And all of those together lead to a lot of burnout and a lot of poor health outcomes and relationship problems. And so what we've been trying to do in our work is actually kind of to Jim's point, to show employers that there is no free lunch, that they're not getting something for free when they're, even allowing these things to happen, intentioned or unintentioned, that if they want healthy, productive employees, happy employees, they need to have a culture where emails after hours are only on an emergency basis. And we've talked to, interviewed people who work in companies where they've adopted this of their own accord and recognizing that it's in their best interest to, force their employees because, we do have this tendency to want to stay connected and sometimes we need to disconnect, like the caller said before, we need to disconnect from work. We need to get out in the world and we need to get out in the natural world. And companies that do that and force their employees to do that have actually see a lot of rewards, and employers are much happier.
That's interesting. Increased productivity from forced disconnection, right? Okay.
Exactly. It's interesting, right?
Thank you, William Becker. I'll come back to you now, Jim Stanton. Jim's director for the Centre for Future Work at the Australia Institute. We heard William there talk about the free lunch, and we started with that concept of an allowance for if you're being contacted. Jim, is this ultimately just a question of money, that if you're getting enough, a high enough pay, then out-of-hours contact is probably to be expected, but that it's in those lower-level pay grades where you should be able to switch off more clearly?
Well, the difference between those jobs that you described, Julian, is partly money, but it's also power, right? If you're a senior person in an organization, then you have the right to kind of control the flow of work, and you can make judgments according to when things have to get done. If you're near the bottom of the hierarchy, you don't have that power. Yeah. So it is certainly a bit of compensation, but it's also, I think, a recognition that most people in society just are doing a job. They feel generally insecure in that job. They may feel that they have to, push the limits in order to try and keep that job. You know, our research shows that there's an epidemic of people working without pay outside of regular working hours. And when you drill down and ask why, it isn't because I really, really love my job for most of them. In most cases, it's because they're worried about your job, or they're worried, like that teacher was who texted you, about getting their job done, given the demands that are on them. So in that regard, I think this is, again, part of a bigger issue about how do we configure jobs that are livable and balanced and sustainable, and where we recognize, we were not put on this planet. We don't live to work. We work in order to support ourselves and live, and we have to have some kind of a boundary. Yes, it's going to be flexible depending on different occupations and industries, but people's rights to leisure time and to be away from work absolutely have to be respected.
Thank you, Jim, and my apologies. I think I might have inadvertently changed your surname at one point there, but it's Dr. Jim Stanford. I hope that's correct.
You can call me anything you want, as long as it's not in the middle of the night.
Fair enough too. We've had a text from David as well, who points out that there can be legal constraints that also protect employers by avoiding instances of voluntary after-hours work in happy times, subsequently becoming underpayment claims when things don't go as well. So that's an interesting perspective there also. I wanted to ask Jenny Lambert about one example which I read about from Volkswagen, which apparently in 2012 simply turned off its email servers for some staff between 6 p.m. and 7 a.m. What do you think of the idea, as William alluded to as well, of employers really taking the lead on this and changing the culture of out-of-hours work contact?
Well, I read that as well, and I think it's an interesting example, but I guess it's hard to know what the culture of that workplace is, or even the culture of the individuals who work there. But one of the things I will say that Jim made the point that it depends on the occupation and the industry. I think it even depends on the individual as well. I mean, as I say, it's not a one-size-fits-all, and that doesn't mean just by occupation. That means by individual. Some people feel stressed if they're connected, and some people feel stressed if they're not. And I think it is about individual understanding and personalising the response rather than having that rule. Now, that may work for Volkswagen, but it may not work for all the employees. I mean, the University of Sussex study showed that for some of those employees, the blanket bans will help some and impede others. That was a very clear result of that study.
Yeah.
So that may be some of the employees of Volkswagen don't feel all that comfortable. They may hate coming in and finding that when they turn their computers on at 7:30 or 8 o'clock or 8:30 or whatever.
Don't know what's going to hit them.
They get it all at once.
Yeah. Right.
They may not like that.
Julian, if I can jump in there.
Sure.
One
We've only got a short time left. Please go ahead.
Yep. It's up to each individual and their preferences as to whether to do that. It doesn't work that way in a competitive labor market where people are desperate to keep their job. If I go in and tell the employer, it's my preference that you don't call me out of hours, but the other seven people beside me say, you call me anytime as long as I get my contract renewed, then we know what's going to happen. So it doesn't boil down to this individual preference. It really is a question of who's got power and who's desperate to keep their job.
Professor William Becker, I think some of your research has shown that it tends to be the people who are really, trying to get ahead and perhaps, improve relations with the boss that do tend to have that out-of-hours contact. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think always the problem with some of these, you know, laws and things is the people who ignore the laws get, you know, rewarded, and the people who obey the laws as employees, as individual employees, get punished indirectly because, as you said, you know, they'll be considered the ideal employees, and the person who's, you know, exercising the rights gets punished. But I think to what Jenny said, I think is also a good point. Some people are very comfortable with it, but in our research, we saw that sometimes those people need a little bit of nudge to disconnect as well, because our research showed that those people tended to have relationship problems, because when we surveyed their significant others or spouses, we found the people who were more connected and had lower preferences for disconnecting from work suffered a lot of relationship problems.
Well, and I'm going to have to nudge us all to disconnect now because the news is coming up. But thanks to all our members of the panel today on The Right to Disconnect. Jenny Lambert, Acting CEO of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Julian.
Thanks to you, also Dr. Jim Stanford, Economist and Director of the Centre for the Future of Work at the Australia Institute.
I really enjoyed it, Julian. Thank you.
Great having you, Jim. And Professor William Becker, I'm not exactly sure what time zone you're in and whether that means you've been breaching any enterprises agreements by speaking to us, but thanks very much for being part of the conversation.
That, yes, so
no, well, that's right. Yeah, imagine a little bit more free reign over there. That's Professor William Becker from Pamplin College of Business at Virginia Tech in the US. That's it for another Sunday Extra. Thanks very much to the producing team, Sky Doherty, Chris Bullock, Isabel Summerson, and Jen Parsonage. I'll talk to you next week.